G'day and welcome to the Car Expert Podcast. There is a language warning for this episode. G'day and welcome to the next episode of the Car Expert Founders Podcast. I don't know what we want to call it, but we had such positive reaction to the first one that we did that we thought, you know what, let's make this a regular thing. We'll keep the same free-flowing language, I guess you could say, that we had in the first one. And of course, I'm joined by Albors and Tony. How are you guys?
Yeah, good, Paul. I've noticed you're heading towards stage four lockdown in Victoria with massive numbers of cases.
I know this. My microphone even has a mask on it. Yeah, today we're going to talk about something really special, and this really came about the second year of Car Advice existing, and it was the full throttle trip. What the hell is it? Can you guys explain what full throttle is and how it all came about?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's obviously when we launched Car Advice, no one knew who the fuck we were. And I mean, some people knew who Tony were and didn't really like him. So that's one thing. But absolutely no one knew who I was and no one knew who the website was. And we were struggling to get cars from anyone from Honda to Mercedes-Benz to pretty much majority of manufacturers.
Subaru wouldn't even give us cars back then.
Yeah, I
think what was the line from BMW, Albors?
Well, there was a person who used to work at BMW who no longer works at BMW, but not work somewhere else in another car company that said to me once.
He's actually a good guy.
He's a good guy, but he's got the greatest line of all time, which sort of gives you the idea of how much animosity we had when we first started. And that was Car Advice is not where people go to buy BMWs, it's where they go to learn how to steal BMWs. And he was the most ridiculous
thing. Deadly serious, right?
He was deadly serious. And I just thought, what the fuck are you talking about? We have never written an article on how to break into a, like, what a ridiculous fucking comment. But
Geelong, I did have some experience in that, if I'm honest.
But that's the level of, that's how much we had to fight to even get a car. These days, you know, you see any Tom, Dick and Harry driving press cars and, you know, I mean, with Instagram and everything, things have changed so much, and that's fine. And, you know, we're all for it. Don't get me wrong. But geez, when we started Car Advice, it was a hassle. So the reason the full throttle trip came about was that we sort of thought, if we go and drive the world's fastest and most expensive cars, then these fuckers will give us basic normal cars, right? That was sort of the idea around it. And it worked, to be honest, didn't it, Tony?
Yeah, the holy grail at the time. I mean, there were plenty of SLS Benz. You know, there was the McLaren SLR Benz and stuff like that. But, you know, we really had to go to the next level. And the Bugatti Veyron was really like a year out. And I think Top Gear had just driven it. And we were pretty close to probably the top 10, probably one of 10 organizations that drove that car about that time. So it was a very rare privilege. And I'll tell you what, it was very hard. And we got to thank, actually, it was Volkswagen Australia. John Dawes, who was the head PR guy at the time, long gone. But he and his assistant, who was actually a German girl, I've just forgotten her name. Do you guys remember?
Was it Nadine, wasn't it?
Was it Nadine?
Nadine, yeah. Book. Yep. Yeah. She got a name, and then she married an Australian guy, and she still works in the industry, I think. But she,
well, run us through that, Tony, because I think that's actually an interesting story, how you tried to get the car through an Audi representative. You then went above and over their heads and got us banned from Audi, got us to drive
the
car.
I got myself banned for about 2 years because when John and Nadine had arranged and basically sent me an email saying that, okay, it's a go. You just need to liaise with this guy, Julius, who's the head tradition guy at Bugatti in France, and you're all set. So when we rang up Audi actually to try and get a R8, which was brand new at the time, she actually didn't believe us that we had the, and she thought we were flat out lying, I guess. And
she thought we were trying to get the Audi to then get the Bugatti rather than the other way around.
Yes.
That's what I think. Yeah. Yeah. And of course that wasn't the case. And, you know, you've got to understand in the press world of automotive journalism, you know, most of these trips are funded by the car makers. This trip wasn't, I can assure you. It cost about $45,000-$50,000. We raised some of that money from Pirelli, gave us some money.
You're confusing the second full throttle trip with the first full throttle trip, Tony. Yeah, you are.
For everyone listening, this is early onset dementia.
Yes, it is. It could be early onset. It's a long time ago, guys. But listen, Eddie Had was our big sponsor of that trip, and
I'm pretty sure you're confusing the first and the second trip. There was no sponsor for that trip, Tony.
Oh,
shit. Who the fuck paid for it?
The company. Actually, you know what? We worked out, and this definitely applies to the second full throttle trip, but the amount of equity we lost in Car Advice to do these full throttle trips combined, we could have actually bought every single car that we drove. And it's
Are you telling me we had zero sponsorship for this trip? We coughed out out of our own.
The first one was Car Advice sponsored. I think we got an upgrade from Eddie Had on that first one. They put us on a list to get an upgrade, but we paid for it all. So,
It's worth just recapping before we get ahead of ourselves here. But the whole trip came about because we wanted to be put on the map, and we wanted people to know that we'd driven these cars overseas. Yeah. And the cars that we had lined up were the Veyron, a pair of Lamborghinis outside of their headquarters.
Including
in Italy,
the Superleggera, remember?
Including the Superleggera, that's right. And then a DBS with Aston Martin that you had organised through your connections there, Tony. So these were kind of the core cars to get us there, and the cars that were going to spark all that interest.
Yeah.
Now, what was first? Was it Veyron that was first?
Yeah, Veyron was first. And to be honest, I don't think anyone had that car for two full days out of the factory with factory tours. I'll let our boys explain the factory tour, because that was kind of special. And I think it was unique at the time in the world, for that matter.
I think it's important to set the scene. You know, we had a guy come with us. His name was Carl Peskett, who's actually a great videographer that we used to use back in the day. He lives in Perth, unfortunately, so things never really worked out for us long term between him, but he's a great shooter and, you know, really studied sort of the likes of Top Gear and other sort of car shows and how they shot things. And but in saying all that, we rocked up to Bugatti with a home camera. We had a home
literally
with a home camera. That's what we had. I mean, your current iPhone would shoot 10 times better footage, but we, you know,
I saw Julius look do sort of a double take, thinking, hold on, what the
when's
fuck?
The crew arriving?
I'm going to give a £1.5 million car to these bunch of dopes? Or?
Yeah. Well, they took our passports when we got there.
Did they? I can't remember that.
Yeah, man, they held onto our passports for 2 days.
Yeah.
Oh, and Paul, serious.
And Paul, I got to tell everyone that you covered your P plate license. you covered that P plate license, and I. Probably without a shadow of doubt, you are the youngest guy ever to have driven a Bugatti Veyron.
No, well, that was the thing. We every fucking week too. It's ridiculous.
Oh, man, I gotta have some claim to fame. I was already over in Croatia and Serbia visiting family, and I came over to see you guys.
Can I set the scene there? We were staying in the cheapest hotel you could get in Molsheim. I think it was called Bugatti.
It was ironically Bugatti. Yeah.
Bugatti, and we were five in one room, and I remember the doorbell going at like 2 a.m. and like everyone has just passed out. We've had a whole day's work, and just getting there, right? And Paul walks in. I let him in the front door, literally in a coma, sleepwalking. And Paul walks in and just yells out, "Wake the fuck up." And he's been on a train for 24 hours from Croatia with no sleep. So he was enjoying the fact that he was waking us up.
Absolutely. You know, going back 12 hours on that day, Tony, I remember landing what airport did we land on? Is it
Strasbourg or
I can't remember.
Frankfurt?
We had to drive into Molsheim, and that's Molsheim's the place where the Bugatti factory is. And that was the first time I have ever driven on the wrong side of the road. And it was like I had one car practice before driving a Veyron on the wrong side of the road.
Now, did we have a Mondeo that broke?
We literally drove it out of the airport and it had a flat. Like it was,
yeah,
it couldn't be a better start to the trip. We packed this whole fucking car up, drove it 10 meters down the road, and it had it flat. And then we had to put the space saver on, right? That's what we did. I can't
space
remember.
Saver was on, and you can't do 80 k's an hour on any European roads without being blasted or horned. And yeah. It was, I mean, before that, we were sitting on flat to the boards at about 200 before we got the flat.
Yeah.
So it was a very interesting experience. And I think we got into a Ford, was it a Ford Laser wagon?
It was a Focus wagon.
Yeah, that's right. It was an absolute piece of shit.
Tight.
But anyway, we got to the hotel. Line. Somehow we got some sleep. And then the next morning, we all got dressed up to go to Bugatti, like a complete bunch of amateurs. I mean, it's impossible to emphasize just how bunch of amateurs we were, I suppose, wasn't it, Tony? Like, it's, I mean, you weren't supposed to be the older statesman that knew what the fuck you were doing, but you were just as clueless as the rest of us.
I really didn't have a clue. We were literally learning by the minute. But
it's worth pointing out as well that experience that we had when we rolled up there, yes, we looked entirely clueless, but we dressed entirely clueless as well. My clothes, for example, I hadn't had a chance to wash them, and because everyone at that time smoked in Croatia and Serbia, I rolled in smelling like an ashtray and looking like an 18-year-old dipshit that doesn't know how to dress, which I still kind of do. Tony, can we elbows run through Tony's outfit, which I think was about 17 sizes too big.
Tony, this is we have
a jacket on though, guys.
We have a screenshot of this, and if you go and find the Bugatti Veyron video on Car Advice's YouTube channel, please watch Tony in it, because there is a section where he starts talking, and just look at his baggy pants, because I reckon they're a size 18. If Tony was a size 8, right? And there
that would have been big on Michael Jordan.
Yeah, Tony and I could have fit into them together, right? And not only that, but his presenting style with the hands has always been, you know, that's part of Tony's character. But in that situation, he literally talks at the camera with his hands moving and then literally holds his hands and turns to the right and continues to walk in that direction like a robot. Like one of those robots you watch in those videos trying to learn to be human, right? But those fucking pants were so big. I think all the comments were about Mr. Miyagi's son about the hands and then the fucking super giant baggy pants. But hey, I wasn't any better, man. So I had left my belt at the airport in my and my pants were too big for me as well. So they kept having to hold them up. And
it is the hairiest ass crack I have ever seen in my life.
I was a bit shocked because I'm standing there sort of talking to Julius, the Bugatti guy, and he's sort of staring, totally focused at my lapel. And I thought to myself, what the fuck's he looking at? He reaches over and literally snaps the Aston Martin lapel badge off. I think he broke it. With the look of disdain.
Well,
how dare you roll up?
You were going to be all classy and high and mighty showing up wearing an
Aston
badge.
That's what I was thinking, because... Yeah, that's what I think. So he would think that these guys have driven Aston Martin, so they're okay with a Bugatti, but that wasn't the – Bugatti is so far above Aston Martin in terms of brand value and expense. I mean, those cars back then, the Bugatti, I think it was like £1.5 million. And
yeah.
I mean, this was extraordinarily expensive. Yeah.
That was back when it was all new. And before we get on to what it was like to drive, let's cover off the factory. We did this factory tour, and you think to yourself, factory, but it's actually just like a small workshop pretty much that is pristine condition. Oh. You could eat off the floor, and they gave us a tour of this incredible facility.
We were the first people in the world to be allowed to film it. And we didn't even realize that at the time, but we were literally the first footage that had ever come out of the Bugatti factory was from us. It was incredible.
And
they even made the mistake, you remember, of showing us that car, the brand new model
the
they had under the covers.
The Hermes. Yeah.
And they said, you can just tape the edge of it if we lift the cover a little bit. And I remember how much trouble they got into for allowing us to film and then allowing us to produce that footage and show people this car that was yet to be released. So it was all new to them. And you could tell, I mean, I definitely felt out of place there. Yeah. But I think we all did. It was very highbrow. You look at the customers that they have.
But I think that video where Al Borz basically gave us a roundup of all the, I think, the 6 or 7 different stations that it takes to build a Veyron back in the day, and And what about when they married the gearbox to the engine? The engine is just literally, I mean, how the engine is as big as a car itself.
Well, the engine, I remember that the engine is also built by a really attractive French girl.
On screen.
Yes, he wanted to marry that.
We all wanted to marry her. Because, I mean, how often do you come across...
Well, first of all, how often do you get to go into a Bugatti factory and how often do you get to see a really attractive French girl building a fucking 16-cylinder engine?
And she was like 25. It was incredible. Like, oh my God, you have the dream job.
It wasn't just that, guys. We found out she was top three French rally co-driver.
That's it.
So that's what made her even more attractive.
Yeah. We kind of lost about an hour of our time just going, wow. Like,
I lost my mind in that place. I really did, for so many reasons, you know.
It was bloody cool. And then also being able to see the Bugatti mansion as well was pretty impressive.
The history behind that place and, you know, where he used to do the handovers of the cars. And, you know, I remember Julia showing us that Bugatti watch that you have privilege of buying for, I think, 295,000 euros back in the day.
That's right. That's right.
And the watch looked freaking hideous too.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. And then the form. I remember the form. I was paranoid the day before. We knew that Tony was going to get a drive of the car, but Elvors and I were, I think I was 19 at the time. Elvors, you would have been 20 or 21. We were convinced that this form would say you must be 40 years old at least to drive the car.
Yeah.
And then I studied the form and thought to myself, fuck me, there's no age restrictions here.
Yeah.
No. Let me give you the real story, guys. In the car, when I had to pass the test of speed before I actually got behind the wheel myself, he said, "Well, who's driving? Just you?" And I said, "Oh, look, I'd like everyone to have a steer." And he said, "Yeah, fine."
For that.
Yeah. So it was. It did take some effort, dude.
Oh, I was genuinely convinced that Elvors and I wouldn't be driving. Like, I was 100% convinced, and I knew that when that form came out and there was nothing on there, I thought, "Fuck, let's just do this." And then when Tony came back in, and Elvors and I were sort of looking at each other, going, "All right, well, that's it." And he goes, "Oh, your turn." And then the dude that was in the car, Julius, he was just on the phone the whole time.
Yeah.
He just didn't give a shit. He just sat there and we jumped in the car and thought, let's get out of here.
But let me tell you, there was an actual process to... So when we did the tour and he said, right, that it's time. So we went out on a back road at the back of the factory, basically a B road around here with just a few trees around. Anyway, he accelerated... And I immediately became nauseous. I looked across and he was overtaking some poor woman at 295 k's an hour in a corner. And I saw a tree and I said, right, I'm fucking dead. This is it. This is how I'm going. I'm going out big in the Bugatti. I truly felt that there's no way this car's
going to
take that corner at 295 k's. And then he full pelted it, full throttled it around a roundabout to show that it gripped. Yeah, okay, it fucking grips. But I'm sick again. And then he pulled over and he said, it's your turn. So I thought to myself, okay, there's two ways I can play this, like a pussy and drive it at 150. Then he's probably not going to give us the keys or I need to give it the full stick. So I gave it the full stick and actually got sick myself again behind the wheel. And it was quite, you know, like, as you guys will attest, you've never been in a car that accelerates with such ferocity and such relentlessness. The torque is just, and it does make you sick because the G-forces are extreme, right?
Yeah,
it's unheard of.
Seriously, guys, like, you know, we've all been in a lot of really, really fast cars and, you know, even my Performante will do 0 to 100 pretty fast, you know, like 2.5, 2.6 seconds. It's not the 0 to 100, it's the 100 to 300 that makes you sick.
Yeah,
it just keeps going. And it doesn't stop. It doesn't fucking stop. It just keeps going and you're just like, fucking hell. So when they gave me the keys, I said to Julius, can I film a little segment, right? I had like literally maybe 5-10 minutes of driving that car and I had this stretch of road that just, I don't even know what the speed limit there was, Tony. Do you remember?
It would have been 130, which is France.
Yeah, I got it up to 361 on that road while Julius was on the phone. and I'm thinking to myself, like, I've never gone this fast in my life.
And this is the second car I've ever driven that's left-hand drive. Like, the first roundabout I came to, I had to, like, literally, thank fuck there was a car in front of me, because otherwise I don't think I would have worked it out, you know?
No, I nearly missed that too, by the way.
My God. Well, that was the thing. He was so casual in that passenger seat that he would just sat there, did his phone calls. When it came to my shot to drive it, I did the same thing, jumped on the throttle. But what I did was pass a police car, and that was probably at some speed well above 130. And when I rolled out of the throttle, I thought, awesome, that's great. I'm happy with this. And he said to me just before doing that, I said, do you mind if I give this like a proper stab? And he goes, hey, it's your license. And I said, yep, that's fine. I'm cool with that. So we gave it a stab and rolled out of the throttle.
Your P plate license.
That's right, exactly. rolled out of the throttle, looked up in the mirror, and I thought, that looks like a police car. And yep, it was a police car, and I thought, all right, well, I'm fucked. I'm going to jail or something here, because that speed in Australia will be like instant jail and shooting in Victoria. And I pulled off the side of the road, and I thought, all right, I'm done here. And then the police car pulls up next to us, waves, and then continues driving. And I thought,
how good is that?
This world that we live in. So I just want to say as well that we're going to put all of the pictures that we can track down from that that day and the subsequent full throttle trip in the podcast article on the website. So just make sure you do a search of that, and you'll be able to see all the pictures.
It was mind blowing, and to think we spent 2 days with that car, and Bugatti couldn't have been more helpful. Julius was basically full time with us as a minder. Yeah. In the end, though, he pulled out of the car and went in our loaner, our rental. While we drove the Bugatti independent.
I was with him in the rental while you guys left with the other car, and probably 10 minutes had passed, and he goes in his accent, a German accent, where are your colleagues? And I said, I don't know. I think they'll be back soon. He said, they said they were going to the corner and back. And I said, oh, I'm sure they'll be back shortly.
I'll tell you what.
We left you as bait, Paul.
Yeah. One thing that is vividly in my memory is when the film car was ahead and Carl was shooting out of the tailgate, I remember he just pulled, there are like 2 Ks ahead, you guys, and I just thought, I'll just give it a quick stab and catch up. I swear to you, it felt like seconds and I caught that 2 Ks. I wasn't even flooring it. The power of that car to rein in kilometers was just immense. And you remember that Julia said to me, okay, whatever you do, don't scrape the wheels. They're 40,000 euros a set. And I'm thinking, fuck me. I mean, these little gutters, those roundabouts. And I went to go to the roundabout the wrong way. And thank fuck, I remembered at the last second to go the other way. Otherwise, I think it would have been, okay, these guys are fuckwits. We'll close the car on.
I think he already knew that.
Yeah,
I think your pants said all right.
Do you remember we posted that night a 30-second or teaser. 1 minute teaser? Fuck, did it go mental?
Yeah.
Well, no one in Australia knew that we were doing it. This was before the age of social media. So we were shooting in 4x3 in, what was it, 380p or something. It was horrendously bad footage, but it was the standard at the time. This was before Instagram, I think, before maybe Facebook had just started. This was ages ago. And
no one Elbors, was doing teasers.
Exactly. And Elbors and I keep saying this. Had we have actually got onto the social media train early enough, we would have had enough footage and enough stuff to become stars on social media by now, but we just didn't bother doing any of that stuff. We stuck to video and sort of using this material to enhance the site.
Yeah, we missed the social media train, that's for sure. But you know what? You know, we had a lot of fun in the process. Okay.
Didn't you sell this to Discovery? And
yeah, that's exactly right. So after we came back, and when we posted this video, YouTube actually featured it. And which is quite that's ironic, right? Yeah. Because recently our Car Expert channel was featured by YouTube as well. So that's, you know how I know that Car Expert is working is because we have the same challenges that Car Advice had. We have people talking shit about us, and we have the, we have the internet, the companies like YouTube and Google really helping us out. And that's how I know it's working. But anyway, I digress. This YouTube video was featured. So you had like 500,000 views in like 2 fucking days. And we were just like, holy fuck. And it wasn't featured in Australia. It was featured globally. So it absolutely went viral. And then, we started getting a lot of messages. And then about a week later, we got a message from Discovery Channel saying, oh, is it possible we'd love to use some of that footage in a...
we thought it was a hoax.
Yeah, we thought it was a hoax. So we want to use some of that footage in a show on Discovery. And I'm thinking, really? Because that was fucking horrendously poorly shot by a home camera. And by people that dressed like they were homeless, you know, like literally at one point, my jeans kept falling off so much that Julius was talking to his colleague in German and realized that we were recording. And he comes up to me and whispers in my ear and says, look... you know, in his German accent. If you translate this later, I was just telling my colleague that you have a hairy ass. Literally verbatim, that's what he said. Because he was worried that I would be able to get a German speaker to translate what he was saying while we were recording. But so we got this email from Discovery, and they actually paid us. I don't know what they paid us, but they paid us like $5,000 or $6,000 to buy this to buy the rights to this footage for TV. And much to Tony's horror. He wasn't included in it, even though he was 90% of the video.
Well, they wanted to be ethnically diverse.
That's it. They were ahead of their time with the.
You did well in that. It was a good piece of video. I think it was the Ultimate Cars or some series that they ran.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. But it was like packaged up with all this other stuff.
Honestly, for at least 6 years after that, every once in a while, I get all these people messaging me and say, oh, I just saw you on Discovery Channel. I was like, fuck, they are still running. They ran that thing for so long. It was endless reruns of that show. But, hey, it worked for us. It was great marketing.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, that wasn't the end of the trip, guys.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, we've gone 25 minutes on Veyron here. Let's talk about some of the other incredible stuff we did there. So we then went from France, where Bugatti had their factory in that beautiful small town, Molsheim. We went over to Italy to, and I can never pronounce this properly, Sant'Agata.
Sant'Agata Bolognese.
Oh, my God.
Yes, thank you, Tony.
A very small town.
But known for the Lamborghini factory, and it's the place where they still produce all of their cars. And this small town employs so many people, especially now with Urus. So many people are employed there. And we had the chance to do, again, a tour of Lamborghini, plus then take out two of their cars, which was a Gallardo Spider and the Gallardo Superleggera.
Can we just point out that night we got there, we went to a pizza shop and got completely ripped off? Do you remember that, Tony?
Oh, yeah, I do, but I'll tell you what, I still remember the name of that restaurant about 1.6 Ks from the factory called Margia.
That's
And those pizzas were literally the size of a tire.
That was the bill.
Freaking massive. And dude, they're only €7. What they didn't tell us is we had to pay for the multiple bottles of water and salads and olives that came out. But probably €15 euro per dish. But anyway.
So let's go through this. So basically, we rolled into Lambo. Again, this was a story of we had no idea whether they would have restrictions.
Wasn't this the trip where we got to the airport and we were driving out and your laptop bag fell out of the back of the car?
And that's right.
Someone stole it.
Focus. That's right. The boot was open. We got there at like 10, 11 o'clock at night. We jump into this rental car. We drive off and I'm like, fuck, it's airy inside this car. And then realized the boot was open and go back to the lane that we were just in and notice my laptop had fallen out and it had fucking vanished. And this guy, this fucking Italian bloke, had picked up the laptop and was making a run for it.
With Jason?
We had to block him in. We had to block him in because he was about to run out.
It was ridiculous. So we picked up this laptop and this poor little fucking Focus, my God, it was full of us plus all our luggage. And we were barreling down the freeway at 180. All you fuckers were asleep while I was doing the hard task of driving this shitbox at top speed. Oh, my God, that was hilarious. That's it. We had to get to our accommodation because it was literally nearing midnight and we had arrived to, was it Bologna that we flew into?
I think we flew into Milan and drove Milan. Down
That's it.
It was a country house, like open windows. And freezing cold in March back then.
Exactly. We woke up with frost. That's right. We thought to ourselves, fuck, we won't be able to film because you cannot see a meter ahead of you. And in fact, all of these videos, the Veyron, the Lambos and the DBS, you can still see on the Car Advice YouTube channel. Unless they remove them. But if you do a search on date, there'll be some of the older videos. And that was the same story. The factory was amazing there.
I got to tell you guys, I didn't expect we were going to get to Lamborghini, particularly the first orange Superleggera Gallardo. And I think we had, did we have a spider as well? I think.
Yeah, a Gallardo spider.
And the people at Bugatti, I remember one lady in particular, Rita Passerini was, I mean, you couldn't get a better person that literally looked after us and did everything.
People at Lamborghini, you mean? Sorry, not Bugatti. Yeah.
And I remember Winkelmann was with his entourage of supermodels.
Oh my God! His vetting process for his assistants must just work on a scale of 10+. If you're anything less, don't bother.
He walked past, and literally there were 8 supermodels following him, and we just thought, "What is happening?" I mean, he lived the Lamborghini dream. That's what everybody believes. What a Lamborghini! What it means.
Yeah, he did so much for that brand over a decade. He ran that brand and was, you know. What people didn't realize is, I mean, he was German, born in Italy, raised in Italy, effectively thought and lived the Italian lifestyle, the Dolce Vita lifestyle. And I was just amazed. But I think the thing that really got me with that factory is to think you were there in the same place that that the Ferruccio Lamborghini, you know, started that company in the 50s was just amazing to me, you know. And then to drive out those gates with those 2 Lamborghinis. And I think she said, you know, we'll see you in 3 days. I mean, I couldn't
remember,
believe it, right?
Do you remember when she said, don't worry about the speed cameras? And there was one literally outside the Lamborghini factory.
Yeah. And we were thinking, on the same road, exactly.
Literally on the same road. And we just flew the fuck past it. It was amazing. She just said, don't worry about the speed cameras in Italy. You'll be fine. And remember when
I was about to say, just as a side note, it is worth keeping in mind as well what you said exactly there, Tony, regarding these factories. This and also the Ferrari factory in Maranello. When you get there, you have this picture in your head that they're going to be these brand new facilities, these superstructures. The Ferrari factory, if you go to the old gate, it is literally the original entrance to this place. And same with Lamborghini.
Right?
Yeah, it's unassuming. And that's what I love about this. It's not a Ford factory in Detroit, Michigan. This is a homemade facility where they still hand build all of these incredible supercars.
Amazing. It's amazing. And, you know, Lamborghini have, you know, become, I mean, they sell more cars in 1 year now than they sold in 50 years.
Exactly.
This is how they've come, you know, they're one of the leaders in carbon fiber production and technology. I mean, it's just incredible, isn't it? Like
Can I just point out that once we picked up these 2 Lamborghinis, our first destination was to Ferrari. We drove straight into Ferrari. And to give you a backstory, we've been trying to get a Ferrari to drive as well. And Ferrari Australia, or at the time, I think it was a Tico. It wasn't Ferrari.
It was a Tico.
It was a Tico. They refused to give us a fucking car. And
they wouldn't give us a look at a car, let it drive.
We literally said, we are going to the factory, and it would have cost them absolutely nothing to give us a car. We would have done an amazing story with it. I think it would have been at the time, it would have been a F430, I think. They just wouldn't comply. And we thought, you know what? It'll make a great part of the fucking video if we drive 2 Lamborghinis into the Maranello factory. And we did. We drove 2 Lamborghinis in, and the security guard lost his fucking mind. You remember?
Yeah. Not only we tucked them outside the Ferrari shop, and we had crowds of people coming to the Lamborghinis rather than going in buying Ferrari shit.
It was fucking brilliant. And the best bit was we then used those pictures in the review and made sure that the PR guy for Atico saw them and realized how much of a fucking mistake he made.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we just drove up and down outside the Maranello gates. In the Lamborghinis, and they were certainly getting more attention than they were paying Ferrari at the time.
It was amazing that everybody left the Ferrari shop to come out and look at the Lambos, and I just thought, I don't know, it must have cost you a couple of grand in sales, but it was worth it.
That was perfect. Well, those 2 cars.
And then I think we had a quick bite in the beautiful little village that Sant'Agata de Bolognese is with that. And we took some shots of the outside a church with a beautiful mural on the wall. I mean, it was just heaven, wasn't it?
Yeah, we had a whole bunch of kids coming into the cars and checking them out. And I think that's actually where it started for us with regards to breaking those barriers down. For us, it was always about us and them when it came to motoring journalists. Motoring journalists always portrayed this thing of, I'm doing this job, you can't do it, you're not allowed to touch this car, only I'm allowed. Well, this is where it started for us. We had kids climbing in and out of the cars, getting photos.
And we loved it. They loved it.
And that's where it led to us doing open days and stuff in Australia, because we wanted people to be involved in the cars. And I know Albon's now with your cars. You love people coming and having a look at the overpriced shit boxes that you own and letting them sit in them and experience them themselves.
Man, I mean, I remember growing up, you know, in Brisbane, there was a guy who owned a Black Diablo, and I used to see him every day.
I knew that guy.
Yeah, when he used to go to Coles, and one day he let me sit in it, man. I must have been 10. Ever since that day, I've just been like, I fucking want a Diablo. And, you know, it's a little thing, but recently I took a kid for a drive because it was his birthday, and I've done that a fair few times. And I kind of go, I remember in the other situation where you were the kid and that happened to you, and what an impression that made for the rest of your fucking life. It's such a small five-minute thing, but it makes such a big impression on a kid. So why wouldn't you do it?
Do you remember when we left San Targeto, we had planned a trip to the place I used to live when I was playing tennis, up in Biella in northern Italy. That's right. And I tell you what, the drive to that place on some of the, you know, we were sitting on, what, 250 in convoy.
We were following other Italians, and this was before they had their average speed cameras. We were following a Mazda 6 diesel at 200 kilometres an hour, and I said, I don't know what the speed limit is here, but I'm just going to follow that guy in front of us.
The Autostrada, it was 130, but absolutely no one gave a fuck. They just went as fast as they want. Remember that Italian guy that started yelling at us at one stage?
He pulled up in a spider. A white spider was yelling this stuff for day. And I think we got it translated years later, something to the effect of, oh, you've also got a Gallardo. It's great, you know.
Exactly. How the fuck did you Muppets get a Gallardo? I think he was saying something like that.
That's exactly.
But do you remember how fast we used to shoot through the tunnels? And I mean, it was just one of the most amazing trips. I've always wanted to revisit that trip.
It was awesome, and the weather wasn't fantastic, but we didn't really give a shit. We just drove everywhere with the roof down, heater full ball, and that Superleggera, every time that passed you, it was like burning a hole in your ear.
I need to point out a couple of things though, and one of them was that the car that I was driving, I believe it was the Spider, was fucked. Its headlights died.
On the way back.
The headlights completely died. So at one stage, I was following you, Tony, in the dark, and you weren't going slow, and I couldn't see anything. I literally was following your taillights and hoping that nothing would jump out or anything like that. And then the fuel cap wouldn't open. Remember, we couldn't even put any fuel in. We had to massage it.
And stuck.
The whole electronics, the entire dash of the Lambo just turned off. It was very normal.
Well, that was back when Lambos were fucked in terms of electronics, but it is worth also noting that the Superleggera didn't have a normal seatbelt. It had a 4-point harness, and every time you got to one of those fucking toll gates, you had to literally climb out of the fucking car.
Well, Tony, do you remember the toll gate story with George? Do you remember when...
That was the next trip.
It wasn't, man. It was this trip because we had the Lambo.
George wasn't with us on the first trip.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. We'll have to talk about that next
time. This is early.
Oh, man, I'll kick you in too.
Don't come to any of the aged care homes in Victoria. That'll be the end of you.
anyway, what our boss is referring to is the next time we did that and we lost more equity, more Veyron could have been purchased. George ran over his left foot and literally crushed the bone.
This is the trip I wasn't on.
Yeah. I couldn't walk. But anyway.
Some of the roads we drove up in the mountains towards a place called Aosta up to Biella. And then I think we arrived in Biella about 11 p.m. And a guy that I used to, you know, who was very kind to me when I was playing tennis in Italy, He had organized a hotel room. I don't think we paid for it. I think it was a 4-star, the Astorian. It was the people were there. We ate pizza at 1 in the morning. The kids were looking at cars again. And I remember...
And Tony, do you remember that hotel, the parking that he'd organized for?
Oh, my God. That was
unbelievable.
That was the tightest parking to manage to get it down the ramp into a safe area for the night.
And that's in the video review as well. Check that out. You'll see that.
Mental, you know. And then we had it with the most marvelous trip with that. And then we left for England, right? To drive.
No, you guys are forgetting the most funny part. We drove back to Lamborghini and we handed back the cars. And we're like, all right, our flight's in like 2 hours in Malpensa, which is Milan's airport. And the guy's like, oh, okay, so you've organized transport. We're like, no, we're going to call a cab. And he looked at us like we're a complete Like, he's like, what do you mean you haven't organized transport? We're like, well, no, I mean, this is before Uber, obviously. We're just going to call a cab. He's like, you're not going to get a cab. Like, you're not going to. I'm like, what do you mean I'm going to get a cab? Like, what the fuck are you talking about? Anyway, as it ended up being, we didn't get a cab and we missed our flight.
That's
and
right.
And we had to book That's right. another whole flight. Again, amount of equity would have lost with that. We had to book a whole different flight at full price and get to the airport.
That's right.
Remember that?
We had oversized luggage as well.
And didn't the guy call us a fucking S-Class Mercedes?
Exactly.
That's funny.
Exactly. Yeah. That's it. The S-Class turned up and I'm like, fuck knows how much this is going to cost.
I mean, by that stage, my credit card was maxed. Everything was maxed. We had nothing. We were just losing money and there were corporate thieves just pilfering our equity by the day. You know, it's amazing we got out of this company with a cent, you know.
Well, let's go on to the UK where it actually became far more expensive because back then it's actually a bit like today, the pound was unbelievably expensive compared to the Aussie dollar and the euro wasn't much better. So we jumped on our flight over to the UK where we picked up the DBS. Yeah. We also did a factory tour of Aston.
Yes.
And back then the DBS was...
brand new. It was literally
was in James out Bond, of the Bond film. That's it.
Casino exactly. Royale in 06 and we were driving it in 08. So it was a very... production started in 07. So we weren't far behind production because we were there in March, right? So,
well, we were fucking rooted by the time we got to this part.
Well,
of the
I
trip.
Know you were, Paul. Yeah. You couldn't give a fuck at that time.
No, fuck no. Yeah,
he was having that time of the month, Paul. From memory, he was just like an antisocial teenager. Just don't talk to me. You know, just sitting in the corner.
One thing I forgot to mention is that you do remember when we climbed out of the Bugatti and then into the Lambos, we thought there was something wrong with the fucking car.
Yeah, we really did.
Because it was so slow. It was naturally aspirated, and compared to that Veyron, it was like going back to a Toyota Corolla. Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, the DBS was, I don't know, it was a bit intimidating back then. I remember taking a corner
wet,
a bit
man.
Too.
It was wet.
Oh, man.
Yeah, narrow rear-wheel drive.
I jammed on the brakes and I thought I was into the fence, to be honest.
Like carbon ceramic brakes. It was rear-wheel drive.
I had to bury the foot.
Tony.
To go straight.
The Aston people were also very prim and proper and they had an age limit of 25, which is why we couldn't actually share that car around. So, I remember that now. We weren't able to share that around. But, yeah, that's a good example of the difference there between the Italians and the British.
Well, do you remember we drove into this property, which we thought, oh, this is making a great fucking photo. And then this guy came out and started yelling at us because we were in his house.
But then he became quite good friends. We sort of chatted with him.
One of Tony's life skills is the ability to befriend every single fucking person at any given point. And I think if you weren't there, we'd probably been shot. But you defused them pretty quickly.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, everyone, you know, the moment you start sharing your passion with, you know, that was an exceptional car. And it still is an exceptional car.
I've been looking at them recently because they're in the 200s, they're well and truly in the low 200s. And that's so much fucking car for 200 grand, like a manual V12, carbon everything. And it still looks the business.
I tell you what.
They have aged so well. Even your Vantage.
Legere is a pretty insane looking car.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, that's a thing. It was, I don't know, the UK was a little different because, we had that issue where, you know, it was fucking wet the whole time. And
what about the London hotel? Really... We had to share a bed with these Swedish backpackers running around naked in this hotel we were staying at. And we were just like, what the fuck is happening? Remember that? It was hilarious. It must have been the cheapest hotel in London.
Expensive.
Yeah.
But it was still probably fucking expensive. Yeah. Oh, exactly.
Picked up a brand new baby hat for Carl. I think it still had tags on it.
This is another picture I'm going to insert in that podcast post. Tony, he had this jacket that was befitting of a road worker. It was this huge reflective vest, and he found a brand new baby's hat that had fallen on this wet ground.
I don't think it was brand new, but anyway.
It offered it to Carl, who had just had a newborn, not telling him that he picked it up off the ground. Oh my God, that is funny shit. No, but I think that that first full throttle trip, if we sort of look at encapsulating everything that it was literally all about us getting put on the map. And we published these stories afterwards. The videos went viral. Everyone wanted to, I don't know, everyone wanted to then work with us. I think that was the turning point. A lot of manufacturers said, well, fuck, if they got themselves a Veyron and all these other cars, we may as well start giving them cars. And I think, would you say that is when the tide started turning for car adoption?
You know what I loved? I loved that when we got back and we said we were the first Australians to drive it, and we certainly were, that, you know, a few people piped up and said, oh, no, you know, when it came to Bathurst, we like sat in it and it's like moved it down.
To the Grand Prix.
Yeah,
that's right. I think they drove it 100 metres down the straight.
Yeah. And, you know, and here we were. We had the head of PR at Bugatti, and you can still find this video where he actually says, you are the first Australians to drive this.
Yeah, exactly.
It's literally there on the internet. You can go watch it. But we had everyone trying to discredit us again. And but you know what? You're right, Paul. I think that that Full Throttle trip was designed to put us on the map, and it did exactly that. So, you know, we laugh about losing equity, and, you know, the people that were funding the business at the time didn't believe in that type of content because they just didn't see the value in it. But we understood what it took to get there, and we had to win the enthusiast first, and the enthusiast audience was who we appealed to, because that's who we are. We're fucking car enthusiasts, right? And that's what we're doing now. Again, you know, the enthusiasts are the people that we love to connect to.
Yeah, exactly. Well, look, I'm keen to get feedback from anyone listening to this podcast at carexpert.com.au is our email address, so you can hit us up on social media. Let us know what you think about this sort of founders podcast. We want to continue doing these as a series and just picking bits and pieces that have happened over the last 15 years of us sort of knowing each other. Let us know what you want to hear about, whether you like the format, or if you want anything changed.
Or if email is too old-fashioned, just contact us on Instagram or Facebook or something. That's fine as well. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And Tony's Instagram is something completely stupid, so you'll have to find him through one.
And he's got about six of them because he keeps forgetting his password. So,
oh, that is funny shit.
I hate passwords.
Yep, exactly. Anyway, thank you to everyone that has listened. Anything else we want to talk about before we wrap up?
No, I think, like you said, Paul, I think there's a whole series of this stuff, and we did another trip. Which I don't think you were involved in.
No, I wasn't on that one.
But certainly worth talking about, because it's something we do want to revisit in at Car Expert, and maybe take some people to Europe when the pandemic is over, if it's ever over, and go for a drive on some of the best roads and some of the best cars. It's just an eye-opening experience. It's a cultural experience. There's some great like-minded people to meet at these. You know, you've got to remember the people that work at these amazing car companies. They're all as passionate, if not more so, than all of us. And you just have a great rapport with these people. You know.
Well, Tony, I think it's worth pointing out that you know, the culture is very different in Europe compared to Australia. And I think that's what was eye-opening for us. It was the first time the Veyron was the first car I had driven in left-hand drive.
Yeah.
I hadn't sort of driven anything else. So I think that for us, when we saw the car culture in Europe and how passionate these people were, and then came back to Australia where we've got 100-kilometre-an-hour speed limits and these draconian nanny state laws, you kind of realise that we are so backwards when it comes to, you know, just being normal car people, that you really have to travel abroad to realize how bad we have it in Australia.
We have and this could be a whole podcast on its own, but we have an anti-car culture here to a great extent. You know, like there's a car enthusiast subgroup of humans that obviously get along with us and believe in what we say, but the majority of people see it as a form of transportation. And you know, like, it's difficult when you go to Italy, where these, you know, this is a country that makes Ferraris and Lamborghinis. Like, people live and breathe cars. Like, when you see a fast, expensive supercar drive past in Australia, most people just go, oh, what a wanker, right? Over there, it's like,
yeah, I hope it crashes.
Yeah, over there, like, stops a crowd and everyone comes and wants to talk to the owner and everyone wants to see the car and enjoy, you know, what that country has built. Like, it's almost like an honor system over there. You know, like, there's a sense of pride with what they produce. But, you know, and now that we have no local manufacturing here, I think that's even gonna get worse. But you're right. It was a whole different culture in Europe when it came to cars.
I just remember driving those Lambos through those small towns, and, you know, older people would come looking and celebrating.
You know what we missed, Tony? We missed. Was this the trip where you smacked the mirror into the wall? Or am I getting myself confused? That's the second trip. All right. Okay. Sorry.
Next trip. There's probably some stuff we left out of this trip.
You'll be back to not getting cars again if you get those stories.
Yeah.
God. Anyway, awesome. Thank you for listening, everybody. Thanks, and yeah, please do get in touch with any feedback you've got. And until next time, continue driving safe on the road. And we look forward to hearing from you soon.
Yeah. See you later.